We bring our attention to our breath, allowing ourselves to be emptied with every out-breath, emptied of random thoughts, emotional associations, worries, fears, empty. And with every in-breath, receiving the Divine Presence, the pure light of Spirit. Emptying and awakening, emptying and awakening. And the more that we can just simply follow the breath, the more we can enter into the state that we need to be in. Relatively free of thought and emotional agitation, distraction. Just being with the breath. We might add la-laha on the out-breath and illa-la on the in-breath. And as we breathe, la ilaha illallah, can we think of being grateful? Can we be grateful at the same time? Where would we be without this? Grateful to be emptied of all of our idols on the out-breath. Grateful to awaken with illa-la on the in-breath. In this way, it's not just a mental exercise. We're putting our heart into it as well. And perhaps we find some rest and tranquility in being with this breath of La ilaha illallah, this unity of attention and intention and presence and heart. We rest in that. And how precious it is to bring our attention, our gratitude, our heart to these words, La ilaha illallah, in these moments, and to rest in this consciously. Just a few more breaths. Make these few breaths the most conscious. Amen. Better not to have a break in the circle. Johnny and Denise, introduce us to your children.
Yes. So this is my oldest, Julian.
Welcome, Julian. Welcome.
Welcome, Julian. One of our sons, his middle name is Julian.
Pleasant.
Yeah, Matthew. Yeah.
And this is Isla.
Welcome, Isla.
Welcome. Wow, beautiful.
One of the parts of Sufi culture we don't have fully realized yet in this circle is the musical dimension. And I'd like us to experience the fullness of that, which some of us have experienced, especially in Turkey recently. And one day we'll have more of it here, inshallah. We're praying for certain beautiful voices to arrive, and musicians, and let's all make a prayer that Allah provides us with that beauty. So, but what I'm going to do is, I have a recording from the Umis Sinan Teke, where some of us, several of us, were there 2 weeks ago on Saturday. And it's a short piece, it's going to be maybe 6 or 7 minutes. And we're going to stand and we're going to be in that atmosphere of this ancient Istanbul Teke. And there's some movements that we're going to learn. So let's all stand up. So hands sort of like this, right hand over the left. And the movement is very simple. It's kind of bow forward to the right and back, and then bow forward to the left. And back, and forward to the right, and back, and forward to the left, and back. That's the basics of it. And we're bending from the waist. Some people just think that you just do the head. No, no. Bend from the waist. There's a physiology to this that is important. Anyway, it's easy. Don't worry. Nobody's going to criticize you or I'm going to look at you. With a prayer, and we're going to be, the chant is going to be who? And Camille?
Yes, I'll just move over to the dining room chair. Okay.
اللهم اجعلنا من العارفين اللهم اجعلنا من الواصلين اللهم اجعلنا من الذاكرين اللهم اجعلنا من الشاكرين اللهم اجعلنا من الكاملين اللهم اجعلنا من الذين لا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون عفو تقصيرات Mahvi seviyat, hali müşkurat, defi beliyat, husulü hayr-i muradat, bakai iman, rızai rahman, evrah-i kiram, selamet hücret-i müslimin, selamet asakir-i muvahhidin, selamet hazirun, selamet cemil ehli iman, aşkullah, شوق الله محبة رسول الله محبة أولاد رسول الله.
Thank you.
Ava, you can sit down. Matthew perfects his nay, and Camille and some others learn the melodies, maybe a chorus of women and men, then we can bring this alive. There are many ways to talk about the Sufi process, or what it is, and what its dimensions are. But let me start in this way, that there are three dimensions that we should, can all remember. And they are being, knowledge, and love. Being, knowledge, and love. Being is the capacity to be conscious, to remember, to have live with an intention, to know our qibla, our direction at any moment, to keep to our essence amid distractions. And it's developed through practices like meditation and zikr properly understood, muraqabah, all these practices would be nothing if we weren't developing being. And you know, again and again, week after week, we emphasize that you can experience yourself, and I mean yourself, not your thoughts, you are not your thoughts, you are not your emotions, you are not your desires, yourself that precedes thoughts and emotions. And yes, it may seem remote to be able to get there at will. But this is what we're learning. This is what we're practicing when we come together in order that we might practice it in our lives and our daily spiritual practice, being. Actually, you know, the word for being in Arabic is wujud. And the word for to find is wajid. And the word for ecstasy is no. I'm going to tell you. Wajd. Don't mean to embarrass you, but it's obvious once you hear it, right?
Yeah.
So wajd means, one way to make the connection, wajd, ecstasy, is finding being. Because being, and this is going to sound a bit mysterious, maybe a bit far-fetched, but ecstasy is the nature of being. Ecstasy is the divine beauty, the purity of vibration that is inherent in being, which we cover over with our thoughts, our random desires and emotions and confusion and resentments and all of that being, wujud. And in metaphysical terms, wujud is ultimate being. The only true being is Allah. And we would not be if it were not for Allah. And now we're getting into the realm of knowledge. right? So knowledge is, and the knowledge of this tradition, is a very unified knowledge, very coherent knowledge. And there are many principles we learn. We learn a language, we learn a vocabulary, a spiritual vocabulary, that derives mostly from the Quran, but Sufis have also added some terms to it. And this knowledge is extremely important, because with these, the principles of this knowledge, we can navigate in this world, we can meet the challenges of life, we can find our way when we have knowledge. If we have no knowledge, we're lost. And knowledge too is like a map. It is both a map and the navigating tools at the same time. I'm switching metaphors a little bit, but still, it's all within the realm of knowledge. And some might even call this philosophy, but I would prefer to call it knowledge, because philosophy has deteriorated in modern times. It's become an academic, technical pastime. True philosophy, true knowledge, true ilm, in the language of Sufism, is what we need in this world. And every world, you know, Allah is the Rabbil Alameen, the Lord, sustainer of all worlds, all the Alameen, all the Alams. Here's one Alam, you can see it right in front of you. But simultaneously, there are other Alams, other worlds, subtleties, levels of reality. It's not so mysterious, really, because our emotions are on a different level, our thoughts are on another level, our spiritual experience is on yet another level, and all the way up to the absolute presence of God. Each alam, each world, has its ilm, its proper knowledge. We need one kind of knowledge in the dunya. We need another kind of knowledge when we enter into spiritual reality. So, we've worked a lot in terms of clarifying this language, clarifying Quranic terms, and also clarifying terms in English. And if you look at any of my books, right up to the last one, The Mysterion, there's always a glossary. And the glossary in the Mysterion is similar to the other two previous books, but it's a bit more complete. So that's a key into this knowledge. Because the Arabic Quranic terms needed clarification in our own language, because frankly, the understanding of these terms degenerates over time, unfortunately. Less so with Arabic than with other sacred languages, because many of the terms are embedded in a revelation. So we can look to the revelation and to some extent find the meaning or meanings there. So I also wrote something called the Book of Language in a series of books for the Book Foundation, the Muhammad Asad Foundation. And I wrote that book so that in all the books we were publishing, there would be a consistency of language. And that we could develop a language in English as well, so that the English language, which needs clarification, needs definition, because our words are kind of vague. I mean, people don't, in common talk, people don't distinguish soul from spirit. They don't distinguish consciousness from awareness. And there are many other distinctions that we need in our spiritual understanding. So you don't need to read the Book of Language, but it wouldn't be a bad idea, because it also has an introduction that kind of brings it all together by Prince Ghazi Muhammad, who was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, by the way. he wrote an essay in which he brought together, you might say, the principal terms in Islamic spirituality, really Sufi spirituality. And that short booklet that he wrote is actually used in high schools in Jordan. So if you were a high school student in Jordan, you would read this book and you would have to know this. We edited his book a little bit to make it a little more appropriate for our culture and time. But that's the introduction, and the rest of it is a section of Arabic terms and a section of English terms. That's the realm of knowledge. However, knowledge is not enough. Being is not enough. You can have being and you can be, you might say, cold and impersonal. You can be very abstract and have a very highly developed capacity for being. You could be a Satanist and have a developed capacity for being as well, an occultist, if you don't have love. So the third is love, ashq. Love comes to us through various channels, certainly the channel of Prophet Muhammad, the channel of our peer Mevlana and Shems, Mevlana's poetry conveys this love. The Sufi lineages embody this love and transmit it. It's a vibration. And the work of Sufism is to raise our vibration in order that we can experience communion with Allah, nearness to Allah. So, our practice, our spiritual practices, our adab, our clarification of knowledge, all of this is contributing to the raising of our vibration. Without raising our vibration, there are certain things we can't even understand. If we come in with too dense, if we're focused on the material realm too much, either through greed or lust or hunger, then we're locked in at a different level. So raising our vibration is always part of the program. There's one more part to this. Communion with Allah, raising our vibration, awakening and developing our own capacities, in Sufism is done in synergy with the community. It's not a tutorial. It's not a solo practice primarily, though there is individual practice. But the real, shall we say, fullness of it comes from the synergy that develops in a community. Because the individual human being is not the ultimate unit of reality. Yourself is not the most important thing. Your story is not the most important thing. All your worries, all the me, not too important. Except that it trips you up, entangles you, even enslaves us. But the movement is in a direction in which my story becomes much less important My story is important only insofar as I see divine grace operating through every detail of my life. Get that? Some traditions say, no, the personal is not important at all. You know, like, we just don't pay attention to that. I won't name those traditions, but you can figure it out. With us, it's both not important and important because the divine does enter every detail of human life. We experience the grace of Allah and all the synchronicities. The more pure our intention is, the more faithful we are, and the more conscious we are, the more things just start to click, and meaning reveals itself. Life becomes more meaningful. In that sense, our story is important. But my story, your story, really not important if it becomes our preoccupation. It's like there's a, you know, if you were launching a rocket to, let's say, Uranus, that's a good planet. And you launch the rocket, and at first it's working very hard to escape the gravity field of Earth. You know, Earth is pulling it back. That's the self, the false self mostly, not the real self. But gradually the rocket begins to break free of the gravity field of Earth in this case. And now it's headed towards Uranus, and eventually it's getting, maybe the sun would be a better analogy. Let's go to the sun instead. Okay, now we're going to the sun, but I like Uranus. That's a whole other story. Uranus is intuition. Uranus is revolution. I like that. It's beautiful innovation in astrology. But we're going to the sun now. And so we've escaped the gravity field of Earth, and now we're just beginning to ride free. We're being drawn into the gravity field of the sun. In Sufi terminology, that's called jazba, the divine attraction. And at that point, you know, our own story, our own personal narrative means less and less. We're much more interested in Allah, the sun, than we are in, you know, my personal story. So that's the transformation. And also, it's in interaction with each other that we come to know our own qualities. If I see generosity in someone, I think, well, maybe I could be generous. If I see patience in somebody else, I think, maybe I could learn to be patient. So we see these qualities in each other, and when we see things that really tick us off, that's probably us that we're seeing. That's called projection. So we learn in that way too. When our dislike of some manifestation of another person really irks us, it's usually a pretty good sign that there's something going on that has less to do with them, more to do with us. So all these things are at play in community, but we won't focus on the negative so much. Hopefully we get by that, and we get by that. The way we get by that is simply by assuming goodwill. Assume goodwill on the part of everyone in the community, and be kind. That's all. And communicate if necessary. Don't say, in the name of adab, I'm just going to stuff it. If you've got a problem with somebody, especially if somebody's hurt you, according to the sunnah of Muhammad, you have 3 days to straighten it out with them, kindly. 3 days. That's the sunnah. So there are ways of working out those interpersonal things, but there shouldn't be that much to work out if we assume goodwill, if we act with kindness, if we're patient, if we learn to be less judgmental, to give less value to our opinions, and to live in an atmosphere of love, which is a lot easier than saying you've got to love. It's hard to love. To live in an atmosphere of love. You know, it's as if the atmosphere is already here. We just have to accept it. It's a vibration. It's the reality of the universe. It is here. It is the very nature of wujud, of being. So, Matthew, what are the three things we have to remember?
Being, knowledge, and love.
Exactly.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is the being the same as the soul, and what's the difference between the soul and the spirit?
Spirit is Allah, essentially. Spirit is that divine impulse that is in you. It's like a dimensionless point, a diamond-like dimensionless point in yourself, in the very core of your being. It's your link with Allah, but it's coming directly from Allah. And it's pure, it's almost impersonal, and it is your connection. So you have spirit, and you have self. And self has kind of many levels, many refinements and, of self. So you have self and spirit, and we need to bring them both together. If we have self that's not in contact with spirit at all, you have pure egoism. You have no soul. Soul, and this is tricky, this is, let's consider this just a working definition to try out. Soul is the result of the relationship between self and spirit. The more self is in relation to spirit, which is the presence of God in us, the more there's a relationship, the more soulful we are, the more we have soul. But you know, you can sell your soul. You know, you go out into the market and you sell your soul. Most people do this. Meaning they give up the most precious resource of their lives, which is their time and their attention. And they trade it for something. So you can lose your soul, you can sell your soul, but you can also purify your soul, develop your soul, enrich your soul. The soul's enriched by experience, by all experience, the good and the bad, but especially the beautiful, and great literature, music, art can enrich our soul, love can enrich our soul. So there's a work of the soul, which is also another description of Sufism, or spirituality. It's the work of the soul. So that leads us to another area, a theme I was going to touch on today, and that is, call upon your Lord. You know, the Quran says, call upon your Lord. Well, call upon spirit is what is meant. Make your call to spirit. It should be easy. Spirit wants to respond, for sure. It said, take one step to Allah and Allah comes running to you. That's what they say. But frankly, truthfully, making our call to spirit, why is it so difficult? Why is that direct experience of being intimate with spirit, of feeling the presence of God fully, why is it so hard? I'll tell you a story. It's a story of recent weeks, actually. Somebody that I spoke with told me that when he was a young man, he had an experience. He experienced his true self. And for a period of time, everything was in perfect order. He felt as if there was no separation between him and Allah. And it was really an enlightened state. It didn't last that long, but he had that experience. And years have passed, and he keeps wanting to return to that experience. He's looking for ways to return to that experience. In fact, he's even involved in a film project. He wants to convey the truth of that experience in a documentary film. Right? Nice idea, but how does that work? And I asked him, do you have a daily spiritual practice? And he said, oh yes, you know. I usually get up for Fajr. I do my Salat. I do praises on the Prophet. I'm grateful to Allah. I recite more prayers and more prayers. And I said, but it's not working for you, is it? He says, no. I've been slipping further and further away. And I said, well, let me ask you, what's missing? Is something missing?
There's no relationship. It sounds like it's become very mechanical, and the things that you described are only there on the surface.
This is what I said to him. I said, your practice is at the mental level only. Remember, I said, knowledge needs love, and knowledge in the mental dimension needs being. So two things are missing. I'm not saying he lacked love, but his love wasn't actualized. What he was probably missing the most is being, which means to pray from your being, to pray from your essence. And this was, if he had had some guidance, if he had the right guidance and the right knowledge, he wouldn't be in this situation. It was not his fault, really, because he was doing all the things he's been told to do. But it's not complete. So my advice to him... Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just thinking, could it be that he's chasing a high, too? Sometimes I think about it, and when we have that some experience, and it's phenomenal, and you want it again, but it's not you. We're not meant to have it ever again. And so you're chasing this thing that, you know, was for you at some point, but isn't for you ever again, let's say. You know, and you've maybe reached some level of maturity to where, I don't know, sometimes I imagine those experiences when you're young are kind of, I don't know. I don't know what I'm... For me, sometimes I get a little bit confused when I hear that. When like a teenager has some sort of high and they want it again at 50 years old. It's like,
do you think most teenagers have the kind of experience that he had?
I don't know. You know,
wasn't a teenage high. This was something else. This was something very real. It really was an enlightenment state. Few people have that.
Yeah, I can't say. I don't know.
So, right, chasing a high, we would agree, chasing a high is not going to get you anywhere except frustration. But we know of people who have gone through this. I had a niece, a dear niece, who for several months was living in a state of enlightenment, and she was maybe 20 years old. And people were worried about her because she was in such a transcendent state that they thought, maybe she's crazy? Is she sane? Is she losing her sanity? No. She was too sane to, in a way, be in exchange with the everyday world. But then it was removed from her.
That's what I mean, yeah.
It was removed. And then she had to spend the years that followed doing the work that would make that state more available at will. And it's a process of spiritual maturity. And that's different. Working on your spiritual maturity is different than chasing a high.
Right.
And I'm happy to say that she's doing well, and she's gone on and gotten a degree in divinity.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's the ultimate answer, not that a degree is what she's really looking for, but she's working with her life in a productive way. So I said to this fellow, try this. I said, breathe out la ilaha with a conscious breath and breathe in ilallah. Same thing we did at the beginning of this meeting. It's very simple. But it's bringing together consciousness with this kalima tawheed. And now there's a possibility that the real work of being can begin with him. And I said, do this for a year and then find me.
Mm.
That's where it stands. We'll see.
Does he know why it stopped?
How could he know why it stopped?
Well, I have a friend who had a similar experience, and he was in a state, and it wasn't something that he was doing, it was just a window open for him. And he was given this, and it became too overwhelming, and he still had his material life to lead or whatever, and he actually asked God to stop it, and it stopped. So I was just curious if there was some sort of mention, like, you know, maybe distraction or something else.
He didn't say anything like that. He didn't. He, as I explained, he regretted the loss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's one thing to, I mean, often, and I know of numerous examples of that, where a sheikh is called in, a murshid is called in to help somebody bring that enlightenment state to some maturity, bring it into balance, which does not mean shutting it down or shutting it off. It means bringing the person into balance, bring the sobriety, we say, that can contain the intoxication. And some teachers, some spiritual paths aim for that experience of high-powered enlightenment, like blow your mind. And they can put a lot of energy into that. And by the way, there's a chapter in The Knowing Heart on this subject. It's one of the early chapters in which this is discussed. Enlightenment and maturity. There are two lines. Two axes, you might say. And if we just shoot up the line of enlightenment without parallel development of spiritual maturity, then we become imbalanced. And that relates to everything I've been saying, and why, remember, I said that developing a communion with God in synergy with our community. The synergy with our community implies this balance, this all qualities of character, of service, of common sense that go along with those higher states of consciousness. If you had only the higher states of consciousness, and that can be achieved. I mean, if that were the goal, there are ways to achieve that. You pump up people with a lot of a certain kind of energy, and they'll get high, and they can become idiots. Very high idiots.
I feel like that would be me.
Well, we're dealing with that. Yes, sir.
You know, early on, for me on the path, I came across a Carmelite nun by the name of Ruth Burroughs. Mm. And she had been in the monastery many years when she wrote one of her books. What she observed is exactly what you said. There were some nuns that, for no clear reason, would achieve spiritual intoxication. She labeled it lights on spirituality. But for most of the nuns, including her, it wasn't that way. But over time, they developed a deeper state of spiritual maturity, and she labeled that lights off spirituality. And so it helped me to appreciate that we receive exactly what we need. And if we need a state of intoxication, that will be provided. And if that's not necessarily what's in our best interest, then that won't occur. And it kind of comes back to the facing all scarcity. The beloved is enough for me, however that unfolds. And all I need to do is be available to whatever unfolds without attempting to direct what unfolds.
Yes, yes. Contentment, consent. Once, years ago on the internet, there was a discussion group and somebody asked the question, what is Sufism? And somebody answered, Sufism is a body of techniques for attaining ecstasy. And on reflection, I wasn't part of the conversation, but because the conversation had already happened by the time I read it. I said, yes, that's partly true, but it's the most immature definition of Sufism I've heard. We can't say, we can't deny it, that ecstasy doesn't come and ecstatic experiences don't come. They do, inshallah, and their gifts, but it's not what we're seeking. And yet, we do. We have beautiful experiences in zikrs, especially in community and especially in those situations where there's a collective resonance and everything is supporting the resonance and coherence of a community of sincere souls is ecstasy, and we're given that ecstasy. But it's also, in a sense, cultivated in the context of a community. It's not sought for itself. And that's why in our tradition, in the Sema, like exhibiting your ecstasy is described as spilling your blood outside. So We're cautioned against that. There's a sobriety that contains ecstasy. And there's also a chapter in the Knowing Heart about ecstasy in relationship to psychedelic drugs and other substances that deliver us certain states, but almost always at the expense, at least temporarily, of our balanced human faculties. Whereas the goal of Sufism is to move to those higher states of realization in a balanced way, so that they're integrated into life and integrated into relationships. So, maybe that's enough. That's the outline of the Sufi process. Today's outline, the way it looks today, and some of the key dimensions: being, knowledge, love. Camille, do you have something for us?
Well, we have some Eunice hovering.
By the way, we've gone back. We found out that the Eunice Emre series, which was on Netflix, it was so terribly translated that it was sometimes unintelligible. It's now available on YouTube in a beautiful translation.
Yes, better done. It's very lovely. I recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Eunice.
Yes, and so there are a couple of moments from Eunice, and also as we move towards the time of Hajj, and this theme of giving up the self and taking account of what that might mean and our lives. And Eunice has some reflections. Bismillah, I'm learning. Those who learned to be truly human found everything in being humble. While those who looked proudly from above were propelled down the stairs, a heart that must always feel superior will one day lose its way. What should be within leaks out. The old man with the white beard never sees the state he's in. He needn't waste money on making the Hajj if he's broken someone's heart. The heart is the seat of God, where God is aware. You won't find happiness in either world if you break a heart. The deaf man doesn't hear. The blind man mistakes day for night. Yet the universe is filled with light. We've seen how those who came later moved on. Whatever you think of yourself, think the same of others. This is the meaning of the four books, if they have one. May Eunice not stray from the path, nor get on his high horse. May the grave and the judgment be no concern if what he loves is the face of God. And in another moment he says, whatever I say, you, the beloved, are the subject. Wherever I go, every impulse is toward you. It's true, those who don't love you are soulless dolls, but the living need a beloved like you. You've veiled yourself from the whole universe. At a single sight of you, it would perish. Giants and elves, humans, angelic powers, all beings are in love with you. The seraphim and maidens of paradise crowd around you and can't bear to leave your presence. From your hand, poison is a delicious drink. My soul is healed by anything you do. When I eat something sweet without you, it's bitter. You are the soul's taste. What else could I want? If my soul suffered 100 wounds, my joy would not decrease. This love washes everything clean. Eunice is just one atom of it. This planet, this whole universe is born from a taste of love.
This is a beautiful combination of knowledge and love. It's not just love, but it's love. It is the knowledge of love. Everything in existence created by a taste of love. Eunice's humility opens him to that. Well, go through all the details of the poem and you see that he's describing the way the universe actually is. It's not just random, fantasies. Because Eunice's poetry grew out of knowledge. It's not, poetry is, a certain kind of poetry is criticized in the Quran. Poetry doesn't get a very much praise in the Quran. It says, woe unto the poets. They wander aimless through the valleys and they do not do what they say. So a poet can be lost in fantasy, in the wrong kind of imagination. But that's not the kind of poetry that a Eunice or a Mevlana offers us, which is why Eunice's songs are sung everywhere to this day. The first great poet in the vernacular Turkish language, and unsurpassed ever since. A humble poet with a vocabulary of a few thousand words. You don't need fancy language to speak truth. Eunice is always welcome here. May we be welcome with him. So Denise, what was it like coming back to your world?
It was very difficult. I felt like, well, first I felt I needed more days in Konya.
You
needed more days in Konya.
Mm-hmm.
It was too short. I visited with Shams every morning at Fajr, even the last day before we left. It was hard, and I also visited Hassan Hussein because of all the stories that everyone was saying, and then I sort of regretted it later because it took all day in his shop, and then I was thinking to myself, I could have spent all that time with Mevlana. I just have this longing to go back.
Mm-hmm.
I understand.
It was so beautiful, though. I'm very grateful and thankful for it, and I am hoping for another trip. Yeah, it's hard coming back, I feel like. Like, everything in my life is, like, it's not aligned, like, with, you know, work. It's like, what am I doing? What am I doing here? Like, this is not me, you know. I want to be my real, authentic self, and I can't talk to others at work what I want to really talk about.
Mm.
And so it's hard.
Yeah, well, this is what we learn to bear until we can bring life more into alignment. I'm not saying I told you so, but I did say to people not to spend too much time, not to get caught up in Hassan is saying we love him. We think it's, for those who wish, it's one option, and I don't blame you. I know how you can wind up just being kind of stuck there.
But it was a beautiful sonnet that he gave that morning about pain and suffering, and so I'm very thankful to have been there for that. And Elif was there to translate.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. But regretting not spending more time with that one.
Well, just remember, always in your heart, in a moment, you can be there.
Yes. Now that you have that reference point, vibrationally, throw out a golden thread, connect yourself to those places. And just know that you can attune yourself. You have it. It's not just a memory that needs to fade. It's a reality that always exists.
Mm. You can still make Fajr at Shamsa's.
Yeah.
Inshallah.
Shams is more present after Konya in the unseen than he was even at the mosque in the seen.
Mm.
MashaAllah. Safi?
Re-entry is always difficult, however.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. I don't know, in a way it felt like a pilgrimage. So the Lama and Shams. I went to Novana and spent a few hours with them on the last day before we left. And it was there was like a ton of chaos because we went around 11 or 12 and people said go earlier, but just the day didn't happen that way. The crowds were crazy, but it was fascinating just finding peace sitting there. You know, I put headphones in and like started doing Zikr, and it was like, it wasn't drowning people out, but the state of peace that you can achieve there was remarkable. I wish I had planned my time off a little better. I didn't get home until 9:30, and I was at work 12 hours later. And had a ton of meetings that day, but it was, I don't know, I felt like I was very present with the patients. I don't know, I think the work that they do, I feel it's very humbling. And I love witnessing people. So I think the trip helped with that. I think there's a longing and a yearning for more.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the community. I think it takes me a while to find community. You might go in with walls come up, then they come down, then you make the connection, and then you have to say bye. So that part is like, so I mean, I like the chat group and people still messaging, especially Dilek. I had a really close she was our, mm-hmm. I don't know, I guess we could call it tour guide, but she was much more than that. So it's nice to have that connection. And also, like, I'm in touch with Raha on a regular, like, on a daily basis right now. So that's been nice having the thread continue. And the last piece is just a gratitude for being so close and to, like, continue. So it's not just like a one-off, one-time deal. So I'm really grateful that I'm 30 minutes away and I get to see you. Maybe like, you know, maybe like every 2 weeks.
Yeah. Eva, thank you. And Jami?
Aside from some, a little bit of jet lag, reentry's been pretty smooth.
Alhamdulillah. You've been going back and forth a while.
This trip, specifically, I felt pretty in tune and got to see how the line was being carried from each place, from Umi Sinan to, you know, just, and I felt I was given some permission to get some insight into that process and the journey as well, from people, first-timers, right up to people who's been holding the space, how that space is being held. Seeing new brothers and sisters taking hands and being connected to the silsila, and gaining some insight into that whole process as well, alhamdulillah. And this community, like you were speaking about, it is a community thing. I mean, there's an individual aspect, of course, as well, but it all happens here. And yeah, so. I feel there's been some experiences that have been given, and inshallah, the knowledge to process it and to increase our being and our love as well, that all three gets nourished and grows, inshallah.
Inshallah.
So yeah, this one's very grateful.
Alhamdulillah. Ebola, let's move on to zikr.